The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to our itsy bitsy teensy weensy Saturday morning show, where we are live and local from 9 to noon, and we take your calls at 303-696-1971. 303-696-1971. I'm just looking at the phones. They're already loading up. So I appreciate that so much. You know how hard it is to get on during these next 3 hours. So get while the getting's good. We're at a whopping 19 degrees in Denver, 21 degrees in Aurora. But don't worry, we'll whack all the way up to a masterful high today of 29 degrees. May get into the 40s later in the week. It's winter in Colorado. Get used to it. We have got an awful lot to do. And as you know, I typically spend the first few minutes of the show laying out what's next in the show and venting a little bit, getting a little bit off my chest so I can calm down, have a civil conversation with you. And we're going to flip that around today. One thing I do want to tell you about is we'll be joined later in this hour by two Colorado legislators, Kevin Van Winkle, who we talked about last week, and Dave Williams, one of the true rock-solid constitutional conservative good guys, to talk about the fact that there will be here in Colorado an investigation into the Dominion voting machines and voter fraud with a hearing that will be held on Tuesday of this coming week. I don't know if it's a Zoom hearing, probably so. You know, the Democrats are a little scared of having live bodies anywhere near. But we'll get into all that. But right now, and we cleared the decks so we could spend a little bit of time with a true historian, political scientist, MA and a PhD from Harvard, multiple New York Times best-selling author, and in fact, a new ebook that we'll probably talk about a little bit here today. I haven't seen him in years, but we talk from time to time, and I'm really looking forward to sharing some time with our next guest, Dr. Jerome Corsi. Doc, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm terrific. It's good to have you back. Before we jump into how President Trump can still be inaugurated on January 20th and why he will be inaugurated on January 20th, I want to ask you a question. I hear at this radio station, other talk radio, in what we would traditionally think would be rock solid constitutional fighting, you know, media for the good guys on the right, that it's time to throw in the towel, that it's over. Time to be a good sport. You know, you're doing damage to the party, doing damage to the country. And you're a historian. And I just look back to, I think it was 2 weeks and about 3 hours right now, 245 years ago, that George Washington had the very first really significant battle when he crossed the Delaware and took out British troops at Trenton. And that was after years of just simply losing every time they turned around. The Boston Massacre that triggered it all. What was that? 1773, I think. And, you know, Benedict Arnold, a hero at the time, really had kind of the first victory in May of 1775. And it wasn't until December of 1775 that the Revolutionary War started to take a turn for the good guys. And yet I hear people saying, you know, Donald Trump, he's just doing damage now. It's time to quietly go away. What say you?
Well, I think Donald Trump's going to win. And I think it's just the beginning of a process our founding fathers intended us to go through. It's interesting, you know, you talk about George Washington in that period of time when he was finding out that Aaron Burr was, in fact, a traitor. I mean, Benedict Arnold, sorry. Aaron Burr is a different case. Benedict Arnold was a traitor. He had a meeting with the French, And he came down into the meeting, and going back, he came through this town and got swamped by the people. Just came out in droves to see him, and were so, you know, proclaiming him to be the father of the country and the like. And he said, with this kind of reaction from the people, we might lose in a civil war, but we can't lose in general because we've got the people. And in fact, they won the Civil War because they kept fighting it. It was the Revolutionary War. What we're facing now, we've gone through many times. In the early part of the Republic, the 1800s, our first elections were very, very rancorous between Alexander Hamilton and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. We've gone through the Civil War and the post-Civil War period. The 1876 between Hayes and Tilden was a real mess. Our founding fathers intended for this period of time between the election and the inauguration, which was originally in March, that we would contest elections that needed to be contested, and there would be times when it would be tough to pick a president because the sides would be so divided, and they have been in our history. So rather than this be a time we should rush to end, this is a time we should really appreciate so we can air out the differences and really examine the issues that are underlying. Now, the Supreme Court decision yesterday was disappointing to those who want to see Donald Trump elected. And I want to make it clear that it was just the first of many. It was a technical decision. It was a decision on standing. And those who understand legal processes know that, you know, the first year of law school, you have to learn how to think like a lawyer because it's not common sense. And standing is, for instance, if you've got to have a dispute. You have to be two parties arguing about something. And if you are in a divorce situation, you want to get divorced, and you take that to a traffic court, the court's not going to hear it. It doesn't have standing to hear that. You've got to take it to the right court in the right way. And what the Supreme Court decided last night was that this case of involving conflict between two states, it's usually a very long and drawn-out process, and the Supreme Court does not like to take these cases. It's an original jurisdiction under Article 3 of the Constitution. It means these cases where states are in conflict come directly to the Supreme Court. They start there, and two of the justices wanted to take it. Thomas and Alito wanted to take the case, but it's not going to be decided just on the constitutional issues between states, and the standing was not considered to be pressing. There was another issue. If the issue was whether or not these states, like Pennsylvania, had put into place the mail-in voting, not by the state legislature, which is the only body in Article 2 that has the right to create rules for the presidential election, but by the governor, the state board of elections, and the state Supreme Court, these cases should have been brought up at the time when these governors were making these rules. So it's called latches. It's a technical term for the case has to be brought out when it's timely, not later, not too late. So we should have been in the courts all year this year instead of waiting until the end, contesting these various innovations the Democrats were putting into place so they could cheat based on coronavirus as an excuse. And in that sense, the Supreme Court is right. I think they should have taken the case between states arguing about the Constitution, but at the same time, it's just the first case. And there's already about 8 or 10 cases either at the Supreme Court or moving through the federal and state court systems that will end up at the Supreme Court. And this is only one of the very first processes. We've got the Electoral College, and there's going to be fights over that. And it doesn't go to Congress to be certified in a joint session of Congress until January 6th. It's going to be fought over there. We've been fighting over everything all year long with the left, from the Russian collusion through the Ukraine and impeachment trial in the Senate, through the shutdowns with the Democratic governors, through Antifa and Black Lives Matters in the streets, through a threat to use the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump from office. I've been predicting that we would go through exactly this kind of election fraud and post-election chaos when I wrote in June this year the plan to remove Donald Trump from the presidency. That was my ebook in June, and I'll stand by my ebook currently, which is Trump Wins. I think at the end of all this, Trump does win.
Talking with Dr. Jerome Corsi, New York Times bestselling author, historian, political scientist. And if you want to join the show, 303-696-1971, one open line. And, of course, you can always text the studio by downloading the 710 KNUS app. And I bring that up now because the texts are already pouring in. And here's one for Dr. Corsi. Dr. Corsi, you are a great American hero. Your books, I've read the last two, are so loaded with fantastic research and writing. Thank you for your battles for the USA. Many of us appreciate you and what you do. Thank you, thank you, thank you from David in Littleton. How about that?
Pretty good. Thank you, David.
You bet. So I do want to look ahead, and we've got some time to do that. But I just, for folks who aren't clear about what we're talking about, the order from the Supreme Court, very short. The state of Texas's motion for leave to file a bill of complaint is denied for lack of standing under Article 3 of the Constitution. I am troubled by that because Article 3 tells the Supreme Court that they're the only place for a battle between one state and another state to be brought. You can't start in lower courts. But moving on, all other pending motions are dismissed as moot. Oh, I skipped over. Texas has not demonstrated a judicially cognizable interest in the manner in which another state conducts its elections. Now, the statement, I believe, of Justice Alito and Thomas is being misunderstood, maybe not intentionally mischaracterized. Here's what they said. In my view, we do not have discretion to deny the filing of a bill of complaint in a case that falls within our original jurisdiction. And they cite to a 2020 Supreme Court case that said the very same thing, I believe. I would therefore grant the motion to file the bill of complaint, but would not grant other relief. And I express no view on any other issue. And people are saying, well, that means they would have taken the case and then the case would have lost at the court. I take that to mean there was a motion for preliminary injunction, a motion to stop certification and to affect the electors and to do all kinds of other things on an emergency basis. I think this is Alito and Thomas simply saying, I think we should have taken this case. I would not have granted the other emergency motions. What say you?
Well, pretty much I think you're right. I think, I think Alito and Thomas are right that when a case comes up of conflict between two states, the Supreme Court has to really take it. It's the only place that case can come. Now, the problem is that the Supreme Court has taken these cases and then sent them off to be administered. In other words, they set up panels to try to get the two states to negotiate with each other. There was a conflict of laws a few years ago over the land in which the Statue of Liberty sits, and it was New York thought New York owned it, and New Jersey thought New Jersey owned it. Well, it ended up they both decided they owned it, and they were going to work together to administer it. That's the kind of solution the Supreme Court likes to have happen. The Supreme Court doesn't like to pick winners and losers between states, and this case was not one that hit the court in a way they felt they had to take it. They could kind of dodge it, which is what they did. I would much prefer they'd have taken the case and looked into it. But I think the truth is that this is not... I thought the case was brilliantly done. It was a great case on just the Constitution. Namely, the major issue in the case was that Article 2 of the Constitution gives only the state legislature the right to set the rules for the election, how elections would be conducted in that state. And in Pennsylvania and these other states, the governor and the state board and the state Supreme Court, the governors usually, all these four states was a Democrat, and they set these rules for the mail-in ballots, so they were completely screwy. I mean, they could send them out to everybody. You didn't have to request one. They didn't check signatures coming in. They tried to get signatures waived as irrelevant. The postmarks were questionable. They tried to do every bending of the rules so that anything considered a mail-in ballot, no matter how it got there over the transom, could be counted. And clearly, that should have been litigated months ago. It should have been litigated months ago, not even now. When the governors were doing this, it should have been litigated and brought to the courts.
What do you think?
At any rate, I don't think it's going to be settled just on the constitutional basis. I think it's going to what pleases me now is that these cases coming forward are going to be about the substantive issue. In other words, what's now on the table, and this is the, you know, the huge gorilla in the room that won't go away, is that there was fraud. I think it's obvious there was fraud. And now that's going to have to be proven in the courts. And in some ways that has to start in a trial court to prove fraud, although there are other ways. Some of the court decisions I pointed to, Abbott v. Perez, which is a case of justice, Justice Roberts was very much in the lead on. He didn't write the majority opinion, but he was in the lead on this one. And Shelby County versus Holder. These were voting discrimination, where there had been a gerrymandering scheme to have minorities not be able to elect congressmen, let's just say. They split up the minority so they never had enough voters in one district to win in a congressional election. But what Roberts said is, let's look at the political science voting data, and they said they got there. They were getting everything they wanted. There were so many Spanish, you couldn't break them up. They did get their Latino congressman. Well, he just used political science data to show that the discrimination did not occur. Similarly, you can use political science voting data, probabilistic data. I'm a political scientist by training, to show that the blue surge after they stopped counting can only be explained by fraud. So there's yet a lot of arguments to come in. And today in Wisconsin, there is a Supreme Court hearing at the state level, state Supreme Court, which could throw out enough mail-in votes that the election would actually go to Donald Trump and not to Biden. That's going to be decided today. And whichever way it gets decided, I'm sure it's coming to the Supreme Court. And I'm sure the Supreme Court's going to take it. So that's one of about a dozen cases that are moving now. Sydney Powell filed, I think, two in Georgia and another state last night as emergency filings. There's going to be filings for Arizona, cases arising in Arizona from Arizona voters who will have standing, arguing fraud and with ability to demonstrate fraud. And again, these cases will ultimately be decided in the Supreme Court, and I'm happy to see it move in this direction because fraud is really the issue here. And I think the American people are now going to get, in this next period of time, I don't know how the Democrats, I think, thought they could game this and it would never get tried, not enough time to try fraud in a trial court and work it all the way up to the Supreme Court of the United States in the time we have to put a president in place. But the truth is, the only other date in the Constitution is the inauguration date, which was originally in March. It's now in January 20th. And there's all the rest of this is flexible by state statute. It can be changed. Even if the Electoral College on Monday votes in Biden, that doesn't mean that's final. If one state, in fact, or more, it's determined that Biden won fraudulently, he will not get those electoral votes.
Right.
So this has just begun to fight,
you
and
don't,
it's going to get interesting.
You don't necessarily have to flip the votes to Trump if you take away enough Electoral College
that's
votes
right.
to put Joe Biden down to about to 269 or less.
That's what I really meant. If you take away the fraudulent votes that came in the blue surge and you go to the totals before then, just taking away those, and maybe even you include the computer votes to the end, Trump will probably still have the advantage because you'll probably take away so many of the mail-in votes that came in late that it tips the balance. Those votes will not be awarded to Trump. They'll just be taken from Biden. But that will be enough to flip the state, I think, in many instances.
So in the couple of minutes we have left, first I want to just update you that Sidney Powell did file Georgia and Michigan yesterday evening, and late last night she got Arizona in. Wisconsin is coming. And,
right.
And those are emergency filings in the U.S. Supreme Court by, as you mentioned, individual states with voters who are harmed or alleging harm. So clearly they have standing. So, again, it's just beginning.
Sure. I want to mention one more thing.
All right.
On the when it goes to Congress on the 6th of January, one senator in writing and one congressman in writing can challenge the electors of a given state. Now, there's another way they can challenge. They can say, we want to challenge Biden's electors in this state because we believe that the Hunter Biden issue may involve criminal activity of Joe Biden, and we want this examined to see if he's qualified to be president of the United States if he has to face a criminal trial. So I think we get both the issue of fraud in the voting, and I think Hunter Biden gets put on the table, because that's going to be a end game last move, and I'm announcing that it will be coming.
Terrific. Two things real quick. I know you've got something at 11:30. We're past our break, but this one will be the shortest answer, and then I'll ask you for a longer answer on question number two. But one statistician, and put on your Harvard PhD political science hat in talking about the idea that the odds of Biden actually having won Pennsylvania, Michigan, Georgia, and Wisconsin independently after the huge early leads that Trump had on election night is one in a quadrillion.
Well, that's a probabilistic argument, and it's a very good one. And voting data would support that. And that's under Abbott v. Perez or under Shelby County v. Holder. It's John Roberts' own logic which would bring that type of a statistic to bear to say that there was fraud in the elections. And John Roberts is going to have to repudiate his own logic to deny that.
Yes, crazy. And last question, what should people take away? I've got my own feelings about this. I'll talk about it later, from the fact that none of Justices Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, or Coney Barrett sided with the two conservative, truly conservative, Thomas and Alito judges in saying, hey, we at least ought to give this case a listen under Article 3 of the Constitution.
Well, I was disappointed in that, that I was hoping that if we'd had Rehnquist and Scalia on the court with Thomas and Alito, I think the case would have been heard. But with the fact that these justices are not as conservative, they may be strict constructionists in their own regard, but they're not as conservative, I think the case should have been heard. But I don't think it. I think that, in a sense, rather than hearing it on technical grounds or just on the Constitution, I think it's important that we do litigate the issue that fraud occurred and that it's wrong. Otherwise, we'll have it again because we won't change our voting system if this just slips by.
Terrific. We're going to leave it there. Dr. Corsi, your latest ebook is available on Trump winning this election, how it ends in a Trump win. CorsiNation.com is the website. A lot of terrific information there. And I wish we had more time with you. I know you've got to go as well. So thank you very much for rearranging a bit, as we did, to make sure everybody could hear from you this morning in Denver.
I appreciate it. And God bless all. I think this is going to be ultimately for the best for the Republic and the American people. It's going to be a difficult ride, lots of ups and downs, but it's going to be very interesting, and we're going to learn a lot.
Fascinating time for political scientists, for lawyers, and for talk radio hosts, no doubt about it. God bless you, sir.
God bless you.
And Merry Christmas. Bye-bye. All right, that's Dr. Jerome Corsi, CorsiNation.com. Full lines. Let's grab our break so we don't cut anybody off on the other side. You stay with us here at 710 KNUS.
News Talk 710 KNUS. Listen live at radio.com. We now return to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
And we are back at 9:30. Full lines. We'll jump all over them here in just 1 second. Just wanted to give you a heads up. In about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking with Dave Williams and Kevin Van Winkle, state representatives, about the election fraud hearing that will be held by the Colorado legislature next week, Tuesday, 10 o'clock. And so we'll find out all about that. And then at the top of the hour, I heard quite a bit of conversation on Peter Boyle's show this week about Donald Trump having a, you know, shadow presidency, a shadow government, if he is not, in fact, inaugurated on January 20th of 2021, as I expect. And one of my good friends, great radio interview, has a podcast of his own, has done TV on Blaze TV, terrific author. His name is Steve Dace. He will join us at the top of the hour with his brand new article. I guess it's about a week old now, in the American Thinker, Donald Trump and the Avignon Presidency. So it seemed like a good fit in light of where everybody's been going on everything else. So let's get to the phones now. Brian in Arvada, you've been waiting the longest. I appreciate it. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, listening to all this stuff, I listened to Peter Boyle's yesterday, and he's claiming no election fraud in Colorado. And I know there's no proof of it. But, you know, this is just on the local level. We just had I live in Jefferson County, our county clerk, he's refusing an audit of the machines. You know, and I'm like, if this is so transparent, why can't Jefferson County get an audit of the machines and a physical hand count? That frustrates me to the end, because if you're not willing to be out there transparent, then I don't believe the results. Why are we even counting on machines? I just don't understand that there's so much fraud that can happen with hacking and this and that. Why are we counting machines? I don't care if it takes a week to count these votes. Let's have physical presence, physical people, both parties, cameras everywhere. I mean, we got cameras everywhere. Everywhere you go. Why isn't our ballot followed by a camera from box to room to counting to machine to counted? Why isn't there cameras everywhere showing this stuff? I mean, it just blows me away.
Well, expected to not believe our own lying eyes when we see in Georgia, and we come back to this tape again, after everybody is told to leave, there's a water main break, we're going to stop the counting. Stopping the counting went on all around the country at this specific range of time after Donald Trump racked up tremendous early leads. Hillary Clinton predicted this. You know, it may look good for Trump on election night, but don't concede. Stick around. You know, we're going to win this thing, and we'll just keep counting. So the watchers are sent out, and then all of a sudden, boxes of ballots are rolled out from under a table that was placed there at 8 o'clock in the morning. And suddenly the counting starts again. It's just little things like that. And in Colorado, one more thing, Brian. In Colorado, why did Dominion close up their office and flee town? Why did they not voluntarily show up, and as they said they would, to testify? I think it was for the Michigan, it might have been the Pennsylvania legislature. As you just said, if there's nothing to hide, well, then just let us take a look. And then you can point your fingers and say, see, stupid conspiracy theorists. And we'll say, okay, we were wrong. We'll figure out other ways to get done with demented President Joe Biden.
And I would gladly do that if that was the case. And the other point I want to make is in these governments, in these Democrat states where they're shutting everything down again, it's political suicide to me, because not just Republicans go to bars and restaurants and work out in gyms. Democrats go there too. So these governors aren't worried about losing elections like Jared Polis, because either it's rigged or there's so many Democrats in their state, it doesn't matter. So this is political suicide for Jared Polis to me, to shut this thing down. But if you're not worried about losing, then go for it.
Well, you can do what you want if you think that the votes are rigged against you. And certainly, regardless of the outcome on January 20th, the issue for the next decade and for the next election, and this includes Georgia, which is why I'm so frustrated with the lack of action by Georgia Republican officials to ensure voter integrity for the Georgia runoffs. But it's got to be the issue that we make sure that accurate votes are counted and illegal votes are not counted. Brian, I'm going to jump so we can get everybody
in. Thank you.
Thank you very, very much. And thanks to Peter Boyles for clarifying. And terms really do matter. I use the term shadow government. And the story we'll be talking, or the piece we'll be talking with Steve Dace about, and the issue that's popped up that Peter brought to the front and people have been talking about all week, is the Donald Trump government in exile. Definitely a distinction with a difference. Let's jump back to our full lines with Don in Colorado Springs. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Randy. And I did email that article that Steve Dace to Peter Boyle, so I don't know if he saw that or not. I hope he did. And I think it is an important article because it does show that Donald Trump is going to continue fighting as a private citizen.
Well, I don't think it shows anything of the sort, but it talks about times in history when that happened significantly in the church. And we will definitely explore that. But certainly, don't you think Donald Trump, if he's not the president, and whether or not he's serious about running as a 78-year-old in 2024, that he
is... Or he'll pick the candidate, as Steve
Dace
points out.
Yes,
good
point.
Talk about that with him for sure.
Yeah. So, yep, and I got that article from you as well. And in fact, had you not sent that, I wouldn't have thought about calling my friend Steve Dace. So
I tried to bring it up last week, but you were really passionate and all that, and I just couldn't stay on the line.
All right. Well, thank you, Don. Anything else?
Well, you know, the thing of it is, you're right about Georgia. They don't want to fight, you know, and I was on with Brockler this morning, and you know we're trying to do things in a peaceful way. You know, he says he doesn't want a civil war, but you know, ultimately, when you are not given the proper redress or recourse, you know, Article 5 was tried. Ultimately, the only thing people will understand is a shotgun pointed at your head, and I mean, they'll do it to us in any way in the end, because you know, they want their brave new world, and you know, they want to be able to enjoy their pleasures and without the guilt, and we're giving them that guilt.
When I see record gun sales month after month after month, when I am close to multiple organizations just around the state of Colorado who are organizing and preparing, I do not see the crybaby leftists, the town burning, building burning,
and
black conservative, retired detective murdering cowardly domestic terrorists on the left being able to pull off some kind of an armed insurrection. And the people on our side, we're going to do our work peacefully.
Brockler was thinking we're doing the armed insurrection, but we only would do that as a last resort.
That would be defense of freedom, in defense of...
And one more thing, we do need to focus on the local level, local elections. I mean, the Republican Party, especially at the top level, I mean, I'm with Peter on this. It's a lost cause. Let it burn. We need a new conservative movement. I mean, the Republican Party started out as a third party. They kicked out the Whigs. Now they're just like the Whigs.
And Donnie, what you're missing, though, is that the Republican Party is doing this internal reformation. You know, the battle for co-chair of the RNC, in my mind, is all about who is going to work best with the state parties to give them the fighting spirit that Donald Trump has brought to this party and energized this party with. You've got all that structure in place.
Okay.
And I know you've got all of the you know, old dogs and the never Trumpers.
And Steve Dace would tell you the same thing, more or less.
Well, we'll find out. Anyway.
Steve Dace has always been for a new movement.
Yeah, but that's different from a new party, because the party, building up a party structure to be effective in an election, I think we're a long way from that.
So
on the other hand, if anybody could do it, Donald Trump would be the one. So I guess we'll see. Don, I'm going to jump.
We need a new movement.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
All right, we'll get to, let's see, last call for this segment. Kurt in Greeley's been waiting since the top. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. I was hoping to pose this to Dr. Corsi. In 30 seconds, I can make sense of this stuff. I was a manufacturing engineer by training. They connect the dots. So what single dot connects all of the following? Bernie Sanders, the World Health Organization, Elaine Chao, who is Mitch McConnell's wife, Hunter Biden, Barack Obama, the Wuhan virus, the Antifa groups, the climate change battle, the Google, and even Jared Polis enacting the breakdown or the stoppages for the Wuhan virus. What is the single dot that connects the Clintons and all those other factors?
I don't know. I was just going to say my first response is China.
The Chinese Communist Party.
See, Kurt, if you're going to ask a question like that, you at least have to give me a chance to try and sound smart and answer it.
Sorry.
But that's exactly everything you said. And people say, oh, my God, you know, how do you tie Hillary Clinton? And all of this goes back to China. And China is the biggest concern that we have as a nation and for the world going forward. And so for anybody to say, you know, stand down, get used to President Jamala, a little bit of Joe and a whole lot of Kamala. And don't fight this right up until the constitutionally mandated inauguration day. I just don't understand, given what's at stake, how we could make that argument in good faith.
Well, if you recall, Bill Clinton gave the Chinese ballistic missile technology. The Chinese couldn't hit the side of a barn with their intercontinental ballistic missiles until Bill Clinton came along. And then the other thing most recently in the news is how their President Trump had to sign an executive order outlawing some software that's popular among teenagers because it all went through Chinese servers. There's some telephone app that goes and
TikTok. Yeah, Zoom, and China, you know, gets information through Zoom. It's all out there. It's suppressed in the mainstream media. We've been so focused on elections and votes and polls and that all of this stuff just continues to infest itself into our nation under the cover of darkness and media cover up. And so really, really important things we'll be having to deal with as we move ahead. I hope and pray.
The only way to fight it is a top to bottom forensic audit for Chinese nationals proximate to U.S. government.
It's a terrific call, Kurt. I really, really love the callers and listeners to 710 KNUS. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks.
All right, we are going to stop it there because I want to spend a good chunk of time to find out about this voting fraud investigation. And you wouldn't think that the Colorado legislature could do that under full Democrat control. But I know how they did it, and we'll talk about it when we come back with State Representative Kevin Van Winkle and my good buddy, State Representative Dave Williams. So you sit tight. Phone lines are full. You're going to have to wait a bit. But stick around, 303-696-1971, when you can call in. I'm Randy Corcoran, 710 KNUS.
Back to Wake Up with Randy Corcoran on News Talk 710 KNUS.
We're back with limited time at 947, 13 minutes to go until 10 o'clock. Lines are full. Everybody's going to have to sit tight because we do have Steve Dace at the top of the hour. We'll get back to open lines at probably right around 10:20. But I want to bring on first a good friend, Dave Williams, State Representative Dave Williams from House District 15. He won his reelection. And Kevin Van Winkle, who is from House District 43, as I recall. As I teased you with last week, and we found out for sure this week, there will be a hearing on the Dominion voting system, voter fraud in general, in the Democrat-controlled Colorado State Legislature. So we'll start with Dave Williams and say, Dave, good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Randy.
How in the world did you guys pull that off?
A little bit of luck, a little bit of putting our heads together and figuring out, you know, what the rules set and what we could do. The only reason this is possible is because there's a committee that was created by state statute way back when, you know, before Colorado went left, where the audit committee had to be evenly split, and that the leadership of that committee, the chairmanship, would be alternated between the major parties. And it just so happens that this year, one of our Republicans, Lori Sane, is the chair of that committee, and we spoke to her and we told her the importance of this, and she agreed, you know, pretty much immediately, and then the rest is history.
Yeah, former State Representative Lori Sane, and she is a rock-solid constitutional conservative, just like you are. And I got a heads up about this. I forget from whom, but I confirmed it with Kevin Van Winkle last Saturday. He wasn't ready to talk about it last week, but he sure is ready now. So good morning, Kevin. How are you?
Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good. A great idea. What does this audit committee, legislative audit committee, investigation into Colorado voter fraud, and I believe expressly and explicitly the Dominion voting machines look like? When is it? What will happen?
Well, first of all, it will be Tuesday at 10 a.m. at the Capitol, room 271. It's one of our largest committee rooms. So anyone is welcome to come and attend and watch. And if that room fills up, there, of course, will be extra rooms available for people, overflow rooms. So even if it's cold outside, no worries. You can just show up and attend and watch and see firsthand what exactly is happening with this committee. And it started out originally as we, Dave Williams and I, we wrote a letter to the Speaker of the House, who forms committees, to form a special committee on election integrity to investigate and respond to many of these allegations that we've all heard about. I know my office has been getting flooded by calls and emails ever since Election Day saying, you know, as a poll watcher, I wasn't allowed in. There are these irregularities. Why are these weaknesses in our state law? Things like that. And so Representative Williams and I really wanted to respond to that, provide some transparency, and give the people of Colorado a chance to, you know, trust their elections once again. And, you know, if I was the Democrats, I would have jumped all over that and, you know, got a committee together and reassured people of Colorado exactly that our election was legitimate and good. And they haven't done that. So we are pushing forward using the audit committee. The audit committee, of course, can review and investigate things to a level that most committees can't at the Capitol.
So what does that mean?
They will be looking.
Well, go ahead.
So they'll be looking into Dominion systems. They'll be interviewing expert witnesses, both on the technical side, people that, frankly, are a lot smarter than me, like computer forensic auditors, folks like that. And then, of course, some of the big Secretary of State's room, or county clerks, and hopefully the Secretary of State, representatives from the company of Dominion, so they can answer questions and be forthright and be transparent.
Will my new best buddy Eric Coomer be there?
We put out a request.
Okay.
through their contact. I doubt it, but you know, you never know. They have the invite. They have the ability to come and help clear things up, and if they don't, then I think that speaks volumes.
Talking with State Representative Dave Williams and Representative Kevin Van Winkle. Dave, how does this work? Will witnesses be cross-examined by people who support the voting outcome or the integrity determination that's been made publicly by most or many in Colorado? Or will it simply be, hey, you have 3 minutes to present your evidence and then 2 minutes for questions from each side? Or how will the actual hearing run?
Sure. There's going to be a structure that Representative Sain is still putting together, but just generally speaking, the people that we've invited, and it's a good balance between Republicans and Democrats and those who, you know, trust the election, those who don't trust the election. And they're going to be able to present, make a presentation initially. And then after that presentation has been made, the committee members will be able to ask questions. The other thing that the Legislative Audit Committee allows is it allows for non-committee members of the General Assembly. So I don't serve on the committee, neither does Kevin. But if we wanted to, we could show up to that committee hearing and also ask questions, and then follow-up questions too. I mean, this is it's a serious deal here, and we can more or less, if we feel the need to, cross-examine, you know, anyone.
We've got about
any evidence.
We got about 2 or 3 minutes remaining in this segment. Will there be? Does this committee have any power to get an expert to, for instance, forensically look into a particular Dominion voting machine that was used in Colorado?
Well, it depends, Randy. The answer is it depends. So in order for it to, you got to look at the rules, but sometimes when the committee wants to take any sort of action, it very well could need 5 votes. Now there's 4 Republicans on the committee. So if you do the math, you need to convince one Democrat. So maybe.
Boy, and that
but
goes
we have to have
and that goes
go
that goes back to what Representative Van Winkle said, is that, you know, why wouldn't Democrats say, sure, let's take a look so we can put all of this squawking and crying and wringing of hands, gnashing of teeth from the right to bed once and for all. Kevin, what say you about that? What do your colleagues on the Democrat side say when you ask them that question?
Well, so far they have just wanted to put everything under the rug, under the bed, not look at anything, just keep everything in darkness. And it should be the exact opposite, especially with election integrity, especially with election transparency. There's nothing more important to the voters of Colorado. We haven't, even if everything in 2020 is perfectly legitimate, we know there are weaknesses in our law that we need to fix between now and the election in 2022. So let's get started. Let's shine some light and hear from these experts.
Makes an awful lot of sense. To remind folks, it's the downtown at the Capitol, room 271, 10 a.m. on Tuesday. What time should people start filing in if they're not, you know, scheduled to witness as a witness to get a seat?
Well, I would recommend that you get there, you know, as soon as possible, because this is getting out, the word's getting out, and people are going to be showing up. There might even be a rally, I think, beforehand. And for your listeners, if you really care about this, visit standingfortrump.com and sign that petition, and we'll help keep you apprised of anything that's going on with this committee hearing.
And then, of course, folks who can't make it down, don't want to brave the weather, whatever the reason, can watch the proceeding online, can they not? Kevin, do you know how they do that?
Yeah, they just do the General Assembly website. There's a right on the homepage, there's a big audio listen and watch tab, and at least the audio of the committee hearing, so you'll be able to hear the back and forth, even if you don't come to the Capitol. You can go to the General Assembly website and listen there.
Thank you, sir. I guess last question for you, Dave Williams. Is there a witness list put together, any names that people might recognize, or is that all in the works right now as far as who's going to testify? And by the way, how long will this hearing last? How much time has been allotted for it?
Well, the committee hearing room has been scheduled for at least, you know, 4 hours, but it's going to be dictated, I think, by the committee members and the chair, so to be determined on the time. But, yeah, there is a witness list that's still being worked on. We do have some confirmations, but Representative Sain, for safety reasons, doesn't necessarily want to release that list yet, because there have been death threats against some of the people that have been invited. And I will say this, though. National figures that you may have heard about and who have testified at other hearings have been invited, and they're working on their schedules to see if they can be here.
Terrific, gentlemen. The website, again, is standingfortrump.com. There's a petition to sign there Tuesday, 10 o'clock at the Capitol, room 271. Get there early if you want to get in or watch online. Very, very important and very courageous and really creative, I think, for you guys to have come up with this idea. I'm grateful for Lori Sain. How providential, thank you, Lord, that Lori Sain is the chair of this committee at this particular time. Just love it.
Right. Absolutely.
Amen.
Thanks for having us, Randy.
Go ahead, Kim.
I can't wait to listen to Steve Dace, his book, Rules for Patriots. We're using some of those things right now, and can't wait to hear from him.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Steve Dace will be coming up next. State Representative Kevin Van Winkle, thank you. Dave Williams, my friend, I'll talk to you soon, maybe see you on Tuesday. Really appreciate you guys' work. It's got to be hard when you're in a minority in such a vicious political time. So God bless you both, and thank you.
All right. Take care, Randy.
You better believe it. All right, we're going to get to our break. I know we've got full lines. Everybody be patient. In about 20 minutes, we'll get back to the calls. But when we come back, cannot wait to be joined by my good friend Steve Dace. And yeah, his book, that's how I met him, was through Rules for Patriots, How Conservatives Can Win Again. It's kind of the antidote to Saul Alinsky's Rules for Radicals. And I've spent a lot of time with Steve, and I'll tell you what, it is exhausting trying to keep up with him because his mind is so sharp and it moves so fast. And so if you don't know Steve Dace, you'll get a taste. We'll talk about his latest in American Thinker, Donald Trump and the Avignon Presidency. An idea that I got from a listener, and in large part because Peter Boyles all week has been talking about Donald Trump and the possibility of his government in exile. So no reason to go away. It's Wake Up with Randy Corporan, 710 KNUS.